We're going to begin the book of Romans. What an exciting book. Now, Paul is the writer of the book of Romans. And it looks like most probably the letter was written from the city of Corinth over there in Greece, in the country of Greece, written from the city of Corinth during Paul's third missionary journey. He was in Corinth at that time for about 3 months. About 90 days. And during that time he sat and he wrote a letter to the church which was at Rome. Now the letter was written, if you want the dates, in the winter of 57, not 1957, but of 57. Or possibly the very early spring of 58. Within about that 3 month period out in there. Late 57, early 58. What is his purpose for writing? Of course, we're going to read that, but let me just give you, part of his purpose was to let them know he plans to visit Rome. He's writing and saying, I want to come and visit you. I know that I don't know you, but I want to come and visit you. And Paul, I hate to say it this way, but he was the kind of guy to boldly go where no man has gone before. He always wanted to go where the gospel hadn't been preached yet. He was always looking for a place so he wouldn't build on anyone else's foundation. And you'll see that at the book, at the end of this book in Romans. Paul says, I don't like to go. If someone's already been there, I don't like to go there. I wish we could learn that. We just don't seem to be able to get a grasp of that. Pastors are always fighting because there are 70,000 of them in one city that has a population of 20,000, and they don't understand why people keep leaving their church and going, and you know, we're funny critters. Paul was wiser than that. If he heard Peter was in some town, he didn't even bother that town. He went around it and looked for a place where no one had been yet. No one, not any of the apostles, or disciples yet, or the apostles of the leadership, had ever been to the city of Rome to start up a church. And so he said, one of his purposes for writing is to let you know, I want to come and visit. And I'm hoping I can get there right after I visit Corinth there. He doesn't get there, by the way, we know that, at that time. He will eventually get there as a prisoner. He doesn't know that yet, don't tell him. So part of the purpose is to let you know I plan to visit and to ask you to pray about that visit. Start praying for me now that God will make a way that I can come and visit and see you, and because I want to encourage you. And another part of his purpose was to present a detailed explanation of the gospel. He wants to get down to brass tacks. Cliches. He wants to get down to where the rubber meets the road. He wants to explain it so that they will have no doubt at what's going on, what the gospel is all about. Now, there are many other things that go on in the book of Romans, but the purpose, simple purpose, I want to let you know I'm coming over there and ask you to pray for me, and I want to give you a breakdown of the gospel so that you will all have an understanding of it. Now, at the end of the book, I've read ahead, you can too, I think it'd be smart, maybe you could read through the book of Romans each week as we go through it. Just read through the entire book, it's only 16 chapters, each week as we go through it. And if it takes us a year to go through it, you will have read it every week for a year. Maybe by then we'll start to get an understanding of it, because the book of Romans is an interesting book. Well, he wants to present a detailed explanation of the gospel. Now, in the end of the book, he tells us that he does know of a couple of people there, Priscilla and Aquila, her husband. Or if you like it the other way, Aquila and his wife Priscilla. Now, he met them, as you recall in the book of Acts, he met them in Corinth. They had been kicked out of Rome. The decree by the Roman government, all Jews have to get out. And so they were all kicked out of Rome. They headed over to Corinth, a big city, where they could practice their trade. They were tent makers by trade. And Paul met them, preached the gospel to them. Looks like they were born again. And he lived in their house. And they made tents together. That's how they worked and earned a living. And so somehow it looks like after the pressure was off, they went on back to Rome, Priscilla and Aquila. Now we don't know who started the church at Rome. We don't really know. We do know that none of the boys did. None of the apostles. None of the church, what we called leadership. It looks like it might have been Aquila and his wife. That couple. because they were a big part of the church in Corinth. Remember, that church was big. Well, it looks like they went on back to Rome, and somehow a Bible study started. Something happened. Now we have a church in Rome. Rome, the capital city of the known world. The power place where politics and religion and money, economics, it was all the PowerPoint on the earth. Rome. That's the city that he's going to be writing to. The church is there in that city. Big city. Does sound like, though, the church itself wasn't very big. Now, Rome was a crowded, big city, full of everything. There is a Christian church. There may be one or two little groups, but it doesn't seem like they're very big. And none of the apostles had been there at this point. And so Paul is saying, I want to come visit. I hope to come and visit you. And he wants to explain to them what their faith is all about. And so he writes this letter to them first, kind of giving them a warning, I'm going to be there. That's, I suppose, probably enough background. So you have an idea of when it was written, what's going on, where Paul is at. Paul is hoping to get there. As you know, Paul doesn't go there. He from Corinth, he does go down to Book of Acts. Let's see. He goes down to Philippi. Heads on down from there, then heads back to Jerusalem trying to get there for the High Holy Day. Gets himself into a terrible jam. He's warned that there's going to be a terrible jam. You recall all this in the Book of Acts. Gets himself into a terrible jam and then gets himself arrested. For his own safety, he's arrested. And going to spend the next few years in prison over at Caesarea. And then he's going to literally be forced to get himself to Rome. It's going to save his life. And he's going to then head to Rome by ship. And you remember all the details of that. Or you can read through the Book of Acts from, say, chapter 20 on, 20 through 28. You can see how he is arrested and taken to prison and spending years in prison. And then you can see how he gets to Rome and is a prisoner in Rome. So, by the way, guys, his prayer was answered. He said, start praying for me now that I can get to Rome. And so the people were saying, Lord, bring him to Rome. Notice how you pray and you leave the details in God's hand. Now, see, if I'd have been praying, I'd have said something like, give me to Rome, but Lord, really make it comfortable. Give me there by plane, first class. Now, that's not how it worked. They were saying, Lord, could you get Paul here? We'd love to meet him. We've heard a lot about him. We'd love to see him. We'd like to hear from him. And Paul's saying, Lord, I'd love to get to Rome. If you could open the door and you could get me to Rome, I would love that. He had no idea how he would ever end up in Rome. He didn't know he was going to end up there a prisoner. He didn't know how long he would be a prisoner there. He didn't know he would be released for a short time, then imprisoned again and get his head chopped off. His prayer request was just simple. Lord, get me to Rome. Some of you have been praying that way too. Don't worry. But continue to pray that way. Lord, let your will be done in my life. I really like an opportunity to serve. Just let me serve. Now, just watch what he does. And you know, when you look back over the years, if you live, when you look back over the years, you'll just be amazed at how he's let you serve. Not exactly like you thought it would be. And it's usually best, I say, leave it in his hands. Don't start giving him directions. Start asking, Lord, your will be done. And that's what Paul was doing. That's how they were praying. So now what we do is we can start this book of Romans chapter 1, starting in verse 1. And we have to stop on the first word, Paul. Because you have to get an idea of who we're talking about. Paul, you remember him. He was on the road to Damascus with permission from the Sanhedrin, from the Supreme Court of Israel, to put to death, to imprison, to persecute anybody who called themselves a Christian. Now, he didn't want it going on in Israel. But even outside the country, he heard, hey man, there's a large group up in Damascus, and that bugs me. I want to shut this whole thing down. Give me permission, I'll personally go and get them. We'll put them to death. And he got permission. He had the letter with him, giving him permission to bring those Christians back, to put them in prison and in chains and put them to death. Men, women, or children, didn't matter. He wanted them all dead. That's the Paul we're talking about. Now, his name wasn't always Paul. His name, he was born a Hebrew of the Hebrews of the tribe of Benjamin. You know all this from reading some of his other letters. His name, when he was born, they named this little baby Saul. One of their big famous kings was named Saul. Saul, the word means asked for. You asked for it. You asked for me. Saul. What a great name. One of the kings. And his parents said, he's going to be something. We'll name him Saul. We wanted a baby boy anyway. Asked for. Now that's a great name. Nowadays, many children aren't asked for. You know what I mean? And people are selling them. I just read about a grandmother selling her grandchild for $20. 20 bucks. Because, you know, they're kind of a hassle to take care of when they're 2 and 3. What have I heard? The terrible twos. I don't know. I'm not sure who makes those turns up, but I'm sure probably mothers have something to do with that because they're around them. God bless fathers. They can go to work. And there's those 2 years olds, and so there's a grandmother selling hers. You know, some children are unwanted. But Paul was wanted. His name was Saul, and that means asked for. As he accepted the Lord on the road to Damascus, he was blinded by the light. It was Jesus Christ he saw. And Jesus said, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" Now, Saul had no idea who was talking to him from the sky. He looked at him, and he could see him, but he had no idea. And he said, "Who are you, Lord?" And the answer came back, "I am Jesus of Nazareth, who you are persecuting." Now, who was Saul persecuting? I have permission here in this letter to go and get Christians in Damascus. I heard there's a big group of them. I'm going to get every one of them I can. So in Saul's mind, I am persecuting those people. I'm going to go get those people. They're bad. But when you touch Jesus followers, you are touching Jesus himself. And so he says, "Why are you doing this to me?" And Saul says, "I don't even know who you are. What am I doing to you?" And the answer back is, "I am Jesus of Nazareth, who you are persecuting." Whenever someone condemns you or attacks you because you belong to Jesus, understand that is a direct attack and condemnation on Jesus Christ himself, because you belong to him. And he's not going to take it sitting down, so to speak. He's going to deal with it. He promised he would. So don't take revenge. Just let God handle it. He said he would. Anyway, Saul gets up blind, goes into the city. And you remember the rest of the story, how someone prays for him, lays hands on him, and his sight is returned to him. He's blind for 3 days. He doesn't know he's going to ever see again. He doesn't know what's going to happen to him ever again. And now he goes into full-time ministry as a disciple of Jesus Christ. And a little later on in his life, by the way, in his ministry, for those of you that wonder, if you read the book of Acts, he was not accepted as an apostle. Even though he was called from the first day that he was blinded, he was not accepted for 17 years. The church and the other apostles would not accept him as an apostle for his first 17 years in the ministry. So those of you who think, "Well, I want to serve," and somebody says to you, "Just serve and we'll watch you." And you say, "Oh man, you're missing a great thing." Just relax and wait your 17 years. And when time has come, whenever your time is ready, God will just pull you on out there and say, "Now go." And so there Saul is. But through those years, he changed his name. Legally changed his name. And he changed it to Paul. Now Saul means asked for. What does Paul mean? Paul means small. Or the little one. Now is that a name you'd choose for yourself? Walking around the rest of your life being called the small one or the little one. Was it because of his height? Now, we're told he was short. But it was because of his height? No. It was because of his heart. He said, "I want to be the least. So just call me little. Just call me small. From the rest of my life, just call me Paul." And that's what he says here. Paul, a servant. Now, we have to stop there, too. We're not going to get very far today. He wanted to be called small or little. When someone calls you small or me small, don't we fight with them? Don't we attack them? Don't we say, what right do you have? You're judging me. You have your attitude. Instead of you say, stop and say, you know, maybe I should just change my name to tiny, little, small. Nothing in the eyes of the world. Nothing. Well, he says, Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle. Now, he's got this in right order. Usually, you and I might say, Paul, I'm an apostle. Well, and I'm called to be a servant too. Yeah, that's right. No, he says, a servant, first of Jesus Christ, a servant. The word, the Greek word is doulos, D-O-U-L-O-S. And it means a slave by choice. I am the little one, and I am a slave by my own will. Now, what is that all about? And this, I think, is interesting. A slave is literally a person owned by another person. Someone who is owned by someone else. Now, you've heard it said, maybe you've said it yourself. Hey, what do you think I am, your slave? Funny that that comes out of a Christian's mouth, isn't it? When, yeah, Jesus said, learn to be the servant of everybody. What am I supposed to do? Write welcome on my back? Well, is there a better word? Just let people walk on me? Well, it'd be comfortable. Not for you necessarily. But isn't that what we are? Or going to be or supposed to be? But he says this. Now listen closely. I am a slave by choice. That's what the word doulos means. The book of Exodus chapter 21. This is where it comes from. Exodus 21 verse 1. I'll be reading verse 1 through 6. You can mark this down. Now these are the judgments which you shall set before them. If you buy a Hebrew servant. Now buy it, a lot of times that means somehow that servant got into debt, or that man or woman got into debt. They couldn't pay the debt. So that means you have bought them now as your slave or as your servant. They have to work the debt off. If you buy a Hebrew servant, 6 years he shall serve. And in the seventh, he shall be going out free for nothing. Meaning that on the seventh year, it was a year that you would set everyone free. So you were only a servant or a slave for a 6 year period. In the seventh year, even if the debt was not paid off, you were now set free and the debt is gone. That's the rule. If a Hebrew owes another Hebrew, a Jew owes another Jew money and can't pay it, then that first Jew literally has bought him now. Until the money is paid off, that is a slave of yours, a servant. And you can only keep him 6 years. Get the most work you can out of him because you keep him 6 years and that's it. At that point, you set them free at the beginning of that seventh year. And if whatever debt is left, it is gone. Now, if he comes by himself, he'll go out by himself. If he was married, then his wife goes with him. If he's in debt and you take him in as a servant, and he's got a family, and the whole family comes in with him, they're part of the slaves, but when it's time to go, they all get to go. Now, if his master has given him a wife, and she have borne sons or daughters, the wife and the children shall remain the master's, and he goes out all by himself. That'd be tough, wouldn't it? And if the servant shall plainly say, do you hear that? Let me read it to you again. Verse 5 of Exodus 21. And if the servant shall plainly say, that means loudly and clearly, making no mistake about what's being said. If he says this, I love my master, I love my wife and my children, I do not want to leave. It's the seventh year, I want to stay and remain a servant for the rest of my life. I love working for this guy. Then the master shall bring him to the judges. He shall also bring him to the doorposts. And his master shall punch a hole in his ear with an awl. In other words, pierce his ear. And he shall serve him forever. That's what Paul is talking about. He's saying, I was in debt. My debt was paid by Jesus. Jesus has become my master. And I have chosen by choice for the rest of my life to be his slave. Now, do you understand? Paul didn't have to do that. Let me read it to you what I mean. Jesus loves us, and he gave himself for us. He bought us with a price. I think you know that. But he doesn't make us slaves. He does not. He will not make you a slave. Notice that that slave in Exodus 21 has to plainly say, by his free choice, I want to stay here and serve you the rest of my life. He doesn't have to. He can walk out a free man. So it is by his choice now that he says, I want to stay. And I plainly say it out loud so there's no misunderstanding. I want to serve you forever. I don't want to go away. I don't want to be free anymore. I want to be yours. Now Jesus bought us. He gave his life for us. He rose from the dead. That doesn't make us slaves. That's a position that you and I must take willingly. We need to take it willingly. You don't have to. And I know many Christians. Hopefully you're not one of them. And for a time in my life, I was this way too. I was a Christian, but I was not his slave. I did not listen to him, but I was truly born again. There are many, many today who don't walk with Jesus, but they have asked Jesus into their lives. They are not slaves. They've got that choice, but they've never said, I willingly just give up the rest of my life. See, it's my choice. Jesus says in Luke 13, verse 34, to the city of Jerusalem, those are his chosen. He's going to die for them. He has been giving them prophet after prophet after prophet, opportunity, chance after chance. And he says this, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, which kills the prophets and stones them that are sent to thee. How often I would have gathered you together, just as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you wouldn't let me. You, because of your free will, said no. Jesus will not force you. It is your choice. And Paul is telling you, the little one is writing to you, the small one. And I am, by choice, his slave. Whose? A servant, doulos, slave by choice of Jesus Christ. And not only that, but I have been called to be an apostle. To be called means to be divinely selected and appointed. I've been called, divinely selected and appointed. I didn't pick this job. I said to him, I want to serve you the rest of my life. And God said, all right, here's your job. Paul is saying, I was divinely selected for the position of apostle. What is an apostle? One who is sent with authority. I have come to you, he says, and I've got the authority. He has sent me with this message, and it's directly from God. Now, look at 2 Peter 1:10, or just write this down. 2 Peter 1:10. Wherefore, the rather, brethren, give diligence to make your calling and election sure. For if you do these things, you shall never fall. Make your calling and election sure. Are you doing that? Are you giving diligence to make your calling and your election sure? He says, I'm called to be an apostle. And that means simply divinely selected and appointed. I was with an elderly pastor. He was in his later 60s, early 70s. I was with him. Just a brand new pastor myself, and we went into a hospital. We were going to pray for this lady who was not doing very well at all. And she had been a Christian for, oh my goodness, 50 or 60 years. And she's laying there in the bed, and the pastor walks in with this young pastor, and I'm right with him. And she stops right away because she knows he's coming in to pray. And she looks at him and says, and who is this young man? And he says to her, this is Bob, and he's a pastor, and he came with me, and we're going to pray for you. And she looked at me. She didn't look at him anymore. She looked at me, and she said, young man, are you anointed or just ordained? In other words, if you're just ordained, I don't need you praying for me. I want this old dude. She was a smart lady. You make your calling and election sure. Are you doing this because you want to, or is there an anointing? Is there a specific calling on your life? You make the calling and your calling and election sure. You give diligence to make it sure, he says. To be called to be an apostle, separated unto the gospel of God. Man, verse 1 has a mouthful in it, doesn't it? Separated unto. There's our problem. There is where many of us, I think, have gone wrong and don't understand. Separated unto means to be set apart, To be separated means to be marked off with boundaries. Are you separated? To be set apart or marked off with boundaries? But notice, not separated from something, separated unto something. Do you notice the difference? Many Christians today are separated from something. They'll tell you, I don't do this, I don't do that, I have to do this, and I have to do that. And we don't own these, and we don't go there, and we can't be this. That person is simply separated from something. They're miserable. That's what they're calling legalism. That doesn't work well for them. Their life is a little shaky. They're not in it for the long haul. They're going to fall apart quickly because they are separated from something. Paul didn't say, I am separated from. He said, I'm separated unto something. You know, when I was very young, and I would play marbles, and all the kids at school would do that. And so you had to be cool. You played marbles too. Nowadays, that's for, you know, I don't know, that's an old, nowadays kids are more mature at 7 and 8, right? And we're playing marbles, and you collected marbles, and you played, and you were getting good at marbles. And you know, one day came and I got separated unto something else. God didn't separate me from marbles. What happened was some of the kids were coming by and they say, Bob, come on, man, we're going to play some football. You got some pretty good hands. Be on our team. I go, that'll be cool, okay. You guys, you know, you go ahead and keep playing marbles. What happened was I went off and I started to play football with the guys and some of the girls. And what happened, God, at that point, I was separated into football. And I never went back to marbles. It wasn't a sin to be doing those marbles. It's just I got separated unto something else. The word separated, by the way, is apharizo. Apharizo. We get our word horizon from it. From the word, the Greek words to be separated, we get our word horizon. What happened was I was separated into football. And now it was a little bigger. I got a broader view and I thought, well, there's the kids playing marbles and that was fun and there's nothing wrong with that. But now I'm doing this and I was really playing that when that was fun. And I played a lot of that. And as I went on, I started getting separated unto music. And so even though I played the sports, my horizon was getting bigger and I started, I'm more really into this. I like that and that's fun and I'll do it. But less and less as time goes on. And as I continue to grow, I was separated from unto a lot of different things, and I've been separated unto this and separated, and now your horizons are getting bigger and bigger, and there's nothing wrong with those marbles. Even still today it wouldn't be a sin to play them, but I haven't touched those in a long time, not because it's bad, but because my horizons have gotten a lot bigger since then. Do you understand that you're separated unto something? If you're just separated from the world, you're going to be miserable trying to keep the rules, trying to be good. I don't do this, we don't do that, I don't smoke, don't chew, don't date girls that do. And everything's a do and a don't. Instead, your heart, all of a sudden the horizons get bigger and you start saying, you know, I'm going to do this. This is where God has me. Soon, your horizons are much bigger and you're doing a lot of things that those things back there, they just don't seem to attract you anymore. There's nothing wrong with them. People say, come on, you got to see the latest movie. And I say, you know, I don't have time. I'm always doing this. I kind of am separated into this now. And some of that stuff isn't so good. And so I'm not really interested. And so, that, you know, to tell you the truth, that stuff doesn't really attract me anymore. But I see people who say, I'm a Christian and I want to do what's right. And man, some of the churches are great at this. And they got so many rules. They got to dress a certain way, act a certain way. Their horizons aren't big. They're still, you know, they're still fighting over whether marbles is a sin. Instead of understanding that now you're growing and you're separated unto. Paul says, I'm separated unto the gospel. What's the gospel? That word means good news. But it's the gospel, my Bible says, of God. And that means it's God's idea. This is not the gospel of men. This is not something men have made up. This is not something people say, well, this is our religion and the way it goes. No, this is God's gospel. It has never changed. And, you know, one of the arguments that I would hear from the New Agers as we talked, or the occultists, or even some of the cults, and even some Christians, they say, you're following a pretty new religion. You know, your religion started around the year 30 AD. And see, I'm following something now. The Hindus say, we're following something that's much older than that. Yours is a pretty new thing. You've only been around for about 2,000 years. And I say, no, read the book of Romans chapters or verses 1 and 2 in chapter 1. Number one, the gospel is God's idea, not man's. Number two, it is good news. The gospel, the word means good news. And notice, verse 2 says, which has been promised before by his prophets in the Holy Scriptures. That means in the Word of God, the gospel, the good news has been promised. Since when? Since the very beginning of time. In the Garden of Eden, the promise, the good news was given right away. When the fall took place, in Genesis chapter 3, God said, I'll be sending Messiah. Good news. The gospel was being preached right in Genesis chapter 3. Way before there were Hindus, New Agers, Buddhists, any isms or any ists. Way before all of that, the gospel was preached. We're not following something that's man-made and brand new. Romans takes care of that argument in the first two verses of the book. No, it is not man-made. I'm separated unto the gospel of God. Which, by the way, has been promised right in the Bible from the prophets throughout scriptures. You know, you can find it in Genesis. You can find it in the books of Moses, in every book. Exodus, Numbers, Leviticus, Deuteronomy. You can find it there. The book of Joshua. You can, well, I'm not going to give you all because I'd have to give you the whole Bible. But Ruth, Psalms, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Zechariah, Malachi, and of course the list could go on and on. This is not something that's just been made up when Jesus showed up and thought this would be a great idea. The gospel has been preached and promised since the beginning in the garden where there was just Adam and Eve and the devil and God. Way before Adam and Eve, way before you hear about the children and anything like that. So the next time someone says to you, you're following a religion that's not too old, you say, I'm following the only religion that is real and has been since the beginning of time. I'm a little one, he says. I'm a slave by choice. I don't have to be. I want to be. I choose to be a servant of the Lord. I choose that. Of Jesus Christ. I'm called specifically to be an apostle. Once I said, my life is yours, you do anything you want with it. He said, all right, here's your assignment. Now it could change at any moment, but here it is right now. And Paul says, that's what I'm called to be. And I'm separated unto the gospel of God. Not from something, to something. If you, as a Christian, feel like you're separated from something, you're going to be trying to get everywhere on your own with good works, being obedient, doing everything right, and it's not going to work for you. And there won't be a heart in it. And that's the trouble we see today. Many people are obeying God because they think he'll get mad if they don't. They're obeying God because they think it looks right. They're obeying. Instead, you're obeying God because now your horizons have been broadened and you say, well, no, I'm, you know, marbles, that was cool. But you know, God has separated me unto football now. Now he's separated me unto music. Now he's separated me unto, and you continue on and your horizons get bigger and bigger and you start thinking things like, Lord, I need you to help me in my life, and I want to pray for the children in South America. All of a sudden, your horizons are getting bigger. You're separated unto the good news, which unto the good news of the gospel, which had been promised, before by his prophets. Where? In God's Word, the Holy Scriptures. Read your Bible, and you'll see the gospel. The Messiah has been promised. He's going to die for the sins of the world. He's going to rise again. And of his kingdom there will be no end. He is King of kings. He is Lord of lords. He has had all power and authority. And he has been the Son from the beginning. Now, we have to stop there. But I want you to know that in the next few verses, you're going to see he has always been the Son of God. In case people think the Christ consciousness came upon him. Have you been separated unto the gospel? Have you chosen to really follow the Lord? Or you just say, I'm yours, yeah, but I'm still going to be doing my own thing. Have you really said, I'm a slave by choice. I love my master and I want to serve him the rest of my life. Let God speak to your hearts. Let's pray.